It's Friday, August 31st, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Hey everyone, I got a great show for you. Thank goodness it's Friday, and yes, it is a very long weekend for those of us in the United States. Strap in. Here it comes.
This is the Geek News Central Podcast, part of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. So grab a cup of coffee, take a seat, and crank up that volume. Because you're listening to Todd on the Geek News Central Podcast.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central podcast. My name is Todd Cochran, coming to you as live as it can be from historic Ford Island here in Honolulu, Hawaii. How are you? Is everybody ready for the long three-day weekend here in the United States? Are you ready for the Labor Day weekend? I know that we are. We've got some things, some family activities planned this weekend. We're really going to kick back and enjoy ourselves. I told my wife it's really time to let's get out of the house. I need to get out from behind the desk and actually relax and take a some time off. Away from the work and away from the net, so she's making up some plans, and we should have probably going to end up spending my money. Going out and it usually equates into shopping for her, so we'll see how it goes. But hey, this is show number 298, and we are fast approaching 300. And I made a realization here a couple of days ago, and we'll talk about that realization here in a second, but. For all of you that are checking out the show for the very first time, hey, I want to thank you for checking out the show. Make sure that you get subscribed to the podcast via a podcatcher, via iTunes, or whether you're using Juice or one of the other various applications. Or make sure you come back to the website twice a week for the newest edition. It comes out every Tuesday and Friday. And, of course, make sure you get signed up for our newsletter so that you can get the show notes delivered directly to your inbox. So everything that I talk about tonight, you'll have a link to. That's delivered via email. And, of course, you'll find that via the website at geeknewscentral.com, of course, along with all of the archive podcasts. And for all of you that are long-term subscribers or part of the Ohana here, as I like to refer to all of you, as you are, well are, thanks for staying subscribed, of course. Hey, as I was essentially kind of a strange thing happened this weekend. As you all know, I'm fast approaching my what they term as official retirement date and the terminal leave time. It's basically the time between when you have your retirement ceremony by the time your last real full paycheck comes in and then you start getting your retirement payments. But I was in talking with some folks at the office and I told the guy, well, I've got this much vacation time built up. I've got, and they give you so much time for house hunting and job hunting and that kind of stuff. And the guy goes, no, you get 10 more days than what you thought you got. And I'm like, huh? He said, yeah, you get a total of 30 days. And when you're retiring for this, it's basically called permissive TDY, where they allow you to go house hunting, just as I've described already. Plus, I've been saving vacation for the last 2 years, and we're allowed to keep as many as 60 days on the books at one time. We can't go over that over a fiscal year. So essentially, what I've got is about 90 days. Well, my official retirement is not until October 5th. So in between October 5th and December 31st, which is my actual really last day, but I'll essentially be my last day is October 5th. I guess that's the best way to say it. I've got some extra time. So I started doing some calculation and I figured I was going to have to, and I had some vacation time I had to burn before the New Year's. So I went and go lose the vacation time for what's called use or lose leave vacation. So I walked into my boss's office and I said, I hope we've got everything turned over because on the 7th, which is a week from today, actually not the 7th. Let me look at the calendar here. Let me bring it up, make sure I'm not giving you a bum gouge. Might be the actual, be the 6th. I said, yeah. No, the 7th. I said, the 7th is going to be essentially my last day. I said, I'm going to be able to start vacation, you know, to burn up my use or lose vacation time on the 7th through the 1st of October, come back to work for 2 or 3 days to do the checkout process and everything else I need to do to get processed, and I'm done. And he kind of looks at me, he's like, wow, that kind of crept on us, up on us, didn't it? And I said, why, yes, it did. Well, it coincides with show number 300. So really, show number 300 is not only going to be a great milestone for this podcast, but it's also going to be a significant milestone for me, because it's really tentatively going to be my last day, quote unquote, last real working day, where, you know, stuff is actually be getting done and I'll be productive and earning my paycheck, because when I come back for a few days in October, it'll actually be just stuff that I'll be, you know, doing paperwork to transition. And really, at that point, I'm done. So so next Friday, we're going to have a good time. We're going to have a good time on the show. And I don't know what we're going to talk about. I'm going to have to definitely mix it up with some tech, and we're going to probably talk a little bit more about some personal stuff too. But hey, I want to thank all of you for being continued subscribers here, of course, and indulging with me. And this is quite a transition period. But wow, what else is going on? Well, I've got some finals I've got to take here within the next week, a couple of classes finishing up. I have, you know, I talked about on the last show, I had upgraded my cable service here to what's called Turbo RR. Wow, what a disappointment. It's, you know, for an extra $9.95 that I am paying the Roadrunner folks, it really, I really have seen no increase in performance. The upload speed is just a little bit better, but not much. So I don't know what's going to happen with this, if I'm going to keep the service or not. But right now, I really don't think it's paying for itself. Now, speaking of paying for itself, I got a email from my contact at GoDaddy, and basically his message was, hey, Todd, got a special deal for you. Do you want to try to do a 3-day special 20% off all hosting promo? I said, yeah, let's go for it. So here's the deal, folks. This deal is actually ending today, all right? And so you have until midnight tonight, August 31st, and it would be about Mountain Standard Time to get in on this deal. Okay, here it is. You get reliable, secure web hosting without long-term contracts by subscribing to GoDaddy hosting plans. And as you all know, they're bigger and better than ever before, with 99% uptime, 24/7 support, and no annual commitment. And best of all, plans start at $3.99 a month. So here's the code you can use for the rest of today, essentially. And of course, if you are on the website, you saw it a couple of days ago, but it's Todd20, T-O-D-D-2-0, Todd20. If you are listening to this show on a day other than August 31st, sorry, this deal is gone. So when you check out, you can save an additional 20%. But don't worry, you can use Geek5 to save yourself 15%, or you can use Todd to always save yourself 10% on purchases over there. And some restrictions apply. See site for details. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com. And, you know, always click through from a link on the website. And this is another just a great, cool code. So, and if you've been kind of holding off, this is a huge, huge discount. I was like, it's only for hosting accounts. It wasn't for servers or virtual dedicated boxes, because I may have had to pull the trigger and buy another one, because it's such a great savings. But if you get 12 or 24 months of service, you combine this with this code, it's huge. It really, really is. So thanks for GoDaddy for offering that up here for this. And then, of course, next week we'll do have something fun. We'll give some stuff away on the 31st as well. Let me see here. I got a couple things I was going to talk to you about real quick on Geek News Central. There was a couple things that I had put up. And before we get into the full tech system here, or tech talk today, I did get a couple of emails from some long-term subscribers of the show, and we may have in the very short future have some new contributors to Geek News Central. Looking forward to them coming on. And I'm always looking for contributors. If you're looking to, you know, cut your teeth on a tech site, love to have you on it as an author. You can always send me an email comment at geeknews@gmail.com. But this morning in my inbox landed a link, and it came from not a podcast listener, but someone that actually reads the blog on a regular basis. And he says, hey, Todd, you got to check this link out. And what it turned out to be was an article that talks about how a gentleman had created a video and actually submitted it to YouTube. And he was actually running for a political office of some sort. So he made three videos, and they were some sort of a comedic type of pun. You know, it was basically this guy's creation. Well, those videos, one of the videos was picked up by VH1. Now, VH1 is owned by Viacom. And VH1, in some show they had, highlighted this YouTube video. Well, you know, that's pretty cool. You know, your video you created was up on this VH1 show. But, you know, they never asked this guy's permission to show it. You know, they essentially kind of utilized the fair use rules and showing the media. But in the end, what he did was he copied the video that they had played, he copied essentially the segment that on VH1 and put that back up on YouTube. Well, Viacom hit the creator with a copyright infringement notice on his own video. So it's simply amazing here. He creates a video, puts it on YouTube, VH1 plays it on their show, violating essentially his copyright by not asking him permission to do it and using fair use rules, which we all do. And then this guy who says, hey, this was fun, this is a great thing for my show or great for my videos, he copies the VH1 segment, puts it back on YouTube, and then gets a takedown notice for copyright infringement. I don't think we've heard the last of this, and I'll be keeping you up to speed on it. If you want to follow the story, you can go over to the Night Shift, and that's night as in like knight in shining armor, the Night Shift. blogspot.com, where you can find the link over at geeknewscentral.com. Lots of great commentary coming back on the roundtable we did a week ago Saturday, and I want to appreciate all of you that have sent feedback. It's probably going to be one of our top downloaded shows in a long time. The numbers are just starting to add up real quick on it. But of course, we want to thank GoToMeeting for being our sponsors over there. And these days, whether you're in business or simply want to share something with friends or family, email and voicemail sometimes just isn't enough. That's why you should try GoToMeeting, a web conferencing solution that will revolutionize how you communicate with your business, associates, family, and friends. The ability to host online meetings is an absolute must for today's business, or even just, you know, for people wanting to share information online. With GoToMeeting.com, it's just like you're all in the same room. Unlimited meetings for one flat rate. Try it yourself for free for 30 days. Just visit GoToMeeting.com/tech podcast. That's GoToMeeting.com/tech podcast. Try GoToMeeting free today. And thanks for GoToMeeting for continuing to be a sponsor over there of the Tech Podcast Roundtable. Before I kick into the normal content tonight, I do want to share something with you. I don't know what it is, but it's been like my internal clock has been off. I have some paperwork that I have to submit essentially within 90 days, no later than 90 days, but no earlier than 180 days away from the deadline. So all month I've been working on this paperwork that I've got to get in, and I'm about, I thought I was about 120 days away 30 days ago. So as this month is dragged on, I've been working on this paperwork, getting it together, and I was getting into a little mild panic because in my internal clock in my brain was saying, you only got 90 days, you got to have this in before 90 days. And I went to the office with this packet of stuff, and I was still missing a couple of things. I was like, oh man, I got to get this in no matter what. And I walked in, and I talked with the receptionist and got in and met with the lady that was taking the information and sit down. I'm going through this stuff. And I'm like, boy, I've been scrambling for the last 2 weeks trying to get this stuff together, and I'm going to miss the deadline. And she's looking at me kind of funny. And, you know, we go on and we're continuing having this conversation. I said, well, I got a couple of more things to get, but I just had to get it in here because I missed the deadline. And she's like, she looks at me and she goes, what are you talking about? And I'm like, I got to have it in before the 30th, before today. You know, this is conversation 2 days ago. And she goes, honey, she goes, you're 122 days out right now. I said, huh? She pulled up the calendar and she started flipping December, November, October, September. I was like, I just hung my head down and I thought, you're such an idiot. And, you know, I don't know why, but, you know, I think what it has been is I've been in such a scramble mode to get ready for Podcast Expo, and there's so much stuff happening in September that my brain had September on the mind, and I thought, how many of you have done that? I mean, you know, I just talk about being a bonehead. So, you know, I just said, okay, I'm sorry for wasting your time. I grabbed my stuff up. I said, I'll see you in a couple of weeks. And she goes, oh, don't worry. She says, at least you didn't come in and have this all to put together in a single day. We'd have really been in trouble. She said, I'll see you in a couple of weeks. And I'm sure she got a good laugh out of it, but I just felt like a total bonehead. But I thought I'd share that with you. All right, let's get into the content here tonight. The first article up is one from Chris Perillo, where he is doing a review of Mac OS X Leopard versus Microsoft Windows. And this is pretty good. I know a lot of you that are Mac users are really excited about Leopard being released. As many people were excited about, you know, as many of you are excited about that as people were excited about Vista coming out. And I do dare say I don't have any Vista machines here yet. But, you know, there's a lot of people that are dying to get their hands on this application or this new upgrade, and they're going to be loading it up. But at the same point, some people are not completely pleased with what Apple has done with Leopard. But there are some amazing discoveries being made. And Chris goes into a few of these. One of them is that he found the VNC functionalities has been baked into Finder within OS X, which is pretty cool. No muss, no fuss. And a lot of us have used VNC for many years, but it's nice to see it built right in and accessible via the Finder system. He's also really impressed with the Time Machine backup that they've got in Leopard. So that should, he says, this is basically backup the way it should be. And, you know, you won't need a system administrator to manage this. You'll be able to do it yourself and actually have data backed up the right way. He talks about Spotlight indexes and searches, and he talks about packages and preferences and all kinds of different cool things. But one thing I did find that I was actually surprised that they have done is that the dictionary now has a direct gateway to Wikipedia. Now, while I agree with Chris that I don't find Wikipedia to be really the best source for everything, it is, you know, good so long as you go in and then you do some verification on your own to make sure that the data that they're, you know, that they have written in there is correct. While you have to be careful of biases and everything else, it does give you some, you know, maybe some gateways into some articles sometimes and links to reference materials. So this is kind of cool. And they're also working on how he's really appreciative on how Apple's handled the platform transition from the PowerPC to Intel 32-bit to 64-bit and so forth. Only, you know, he says there's been a few hiccups along the way, but he says it's been a much better experience for Mac users. Now, I'm not going to go into all this here, but he does have a pretty good write-up on things he thinks is going to be impressive with Leopard. So we'll see what happens here with that. And, of course, this comes on the heels, too, of Microsoft announcing the Service Pack 1 beta. That I don't have a link for that, but it was up yesterday or the day before, I believe. And so the beta of Service Pack 1 is I think it's available. And I don't know who else it's available for, but that's getting close. So I think what I'm going to do is once Service Pack 1 is released and upgraded, I'm going to wait a few weeks and see how the reviews are. Then I'll probably punch a machine or two here up to Vista. I'm going to have to continue to look at the, make sure all my applications are going to be able to run, because I am using some older applications for some of the podcast production process here. So, all right, let's move on to the next article I have. And this is an article that came from Business 2.0 off of CNN.com talking about essentially alternative energy sources for homes. We, you know, I'm sure many of you have solar panels on your house that tie into your hot water system. Now, that's a real popular thing here in Hawaii. Some of you may even have some sort of alternative energy generation devices, and I'm sure that it's not a lot of you that have this. But a number of months ago, I wrote a paper on this very particular subject and looking at, you know, essentially the challenges to getting homes off the grid or actually being able to put energy back into the grid. And while I think the solar panels are, you know, they're a no-brainer and, you know, they really help people save electricity on their hot water bill, you know, the hot water heater, I think when it comes to putting in, you know, power generating devices in our basements and, you know, different ways to generate power, whether it be through windmills or, you know, whatever way you're generating power, there's always trade-offs. And one thing that I was really surprised about was where, you know, while they're really making advances in fuel cells, where it's essentially converting any type of hydrocarbon fuel like ethanol, biodiesel, natural gas into electricity, the byproducts of these fuel cells are almost as bad. You know, the cost to build them, the cost to maintain them, the cost to dispose of them, and the essentially the kind of the green impact, and I don't know if I want to use that word specifically, but I guess that's the buzzword today. The green impact on those fuel cells is pretty high, almost to the point where even though you are getting your home off the grid and maybe actually putting energy back into the grid, the environmental impact is much, much higher than if you had been just hooked up to a power plant. But this article goes into a company called Bloom Energy, and I'll have this linked up. And what this is it's a system in which a home has its own fuel cell, which uses but does not burn hydrocarbon fuels. And because there's no combustion, the cells produce half as much CO2 as today's power plant. So this might be something new that's coming forth that you know, it's going to be a lot better when it comes to producing energy in the home and getting yourself off the grid. So we'll see what happens here. There's always a trade-off with these things. And if you really dig in deep and look at the research that's been done, you know, I think we all think it would be very noble to have a, you know, a windmill in the back of the house generating electricity and having, you know, not having to pay electricity bill. But at the same point, I think we have to be realistic that sometimes those solutions, while they look pretty novel and make us feel good, the long-term impact may be higher than what it would have been if we had just been on the regular grid. So I'll link this up in the show notes for you. You can check it out and love to hear your feedback on this as well. You know, for some reason, it's been like the last two or three shows, maybe even four shows. It seems like I've been starting recording really late. You guys been able to tell? I tell you, I really can tell. When I'm about an hour off on my schedule right now. I don't know what it is, but hopefully I can get to an early recording block here in the very near future. All right, speaking of recording blocks, it kind of rhymes with an article that's up from Ryan Block, and he has an open letter to friends and colleagues on keyword popovers. I'm sure you've all seen this. You know, when you're hovering, going over, reading a website, and you see a hyperlink in the website, and you scroll your mouse down to maybe click on the hyperlink, and boom, all of a sudden pops up some ad. You know, drives me nuts. it really drives me crazy. And he gives a very good piece of advice to his friends. And while he doesn't mince any words, and I can't read what he has to say here on the show because it would change the G rating to an R rating. He's very pertinent in saying, you guys just need to stop. You really do. It's become annoying, and you know, start. Why don't you just treat your readers with some respect? And I got to thinking about this, and I'm thinking to myself, I don't know how much money they make on those ads, but they must be making a lot because they're becoming more prevalent. There's more on a page, but it sure is annoying. I refuse to click on those types of links. It just drives me nuts. And why don't they, you know, instead, if they're hurting for money so bad on those sites, why don't they just ask people to pay? You know, if you're going to insult them so bad that they load up the text with a bunch of those pop-up ads, you know, why don't we just, you know, I'll give you $2 a month and don't have them up there and I'll come read your site. You know, whatever it may be, but just stop. I agree here on this. Do you guys just get, does it just make you mad to see this? And by the comments that he's getting in his posting here, he's not alone, and I don't think the audience that's on this show is going to disagree with him, that's for sure. All right, next up, first Zune 2 and Zune Flash Shots. So they've got some pictures in the wild of the new Zune 2, and while there hasn't been a big evolutionary change in the device, it does, it is morphing a little bit more towards a iPod look. So they've got an 80 gig version that's a hard drive version, then a 4 and 8 gig flash model. And they look pretty nice. They're typically like, you know, they mimic the footprint of an iPod. And it looks like they've changed the actual texture of the Zune. And I don't know if you played around with a Zune before, but a Zune's got a really weird texture. It really, really does. It's actually kind of annoying, but it looks like they went to a lacquer type of finish on this, and I think that's going to help them a lot here. So I guess we'll keep our eyes peeled, and rumor on the street is that the Zune 2 is going to have podcasting support. That's what I'm hearing, and we'll see what Microsoft does here with this, and I'm hopeful that they will, and it's about time that they come to the party. If, you know, they're a little late, obviously, but maybe they're just going to finally give in and have it built in. Speaking of the Wikipedia, as we talked about earlier, there's a new site that I was not familiar with at all called WikiRage. And this is a site that lists the pages in Wikipedia which are receiving the most edits per unique editor over various periods of time. It includes popular people in the news, latest fads, and the hottest video games, which can be quickly identified by monitoring this social, this site. So right now, I'm looking here at the, did you hear me say that? I said here twice. I'm looking here at the listing. And while I can't say that it's following what's going on in national news right now, it is kind of odd to see what the top 100 or so pages are being edited right now. So anyway, this might be worth something to check out. Might be something here that'll pique your interest and allow you to dig in a little deeper on what is hot and heavy over at Wikipedia at the time. All right, Engadget Hard Drive has a great article on what it takes to produce an HD newscast, and they were able to take a tour of WFTS ABC 28. I guess that must be a San Francisco station. And they spent about 5 hours in going through and looking at their facilities and what it takes to put on an HD newscast and what it takes to pump HD out over the air and through cable wires. This is impressive. Very impressive set of tools, editing software, you name it. Gosh, this is it's a lot of money. A lot of money in TV, folks. Huge, huge amounts of money. But I'll let you take a look at this if you're into gadgets and you want to see all the cool stuff that it takes to actually broadcast. All right, those of you that are Mac users, there's a great article over on Mac OS 10 Hints, and this is how to secure your internet connection at Starbucks. So they've got a great tutorial, a great how-to on how to secure your connection if you're using their T-Mobile hotspot service. And he was actually able to get through to T-Mobile themselves, and actually they were able to help him walk through what it takes to secure his connection on his Mac. It's been relatively easy. They've had actually instructions on how to do it for PC users, Windows PC users, for a long time. So now this is the first time that this has come out. So if you want to secure your wireless connection while you're at the at Starbucks, you can check this out via the show notes. All right, Microsoft is, boy, they have just really raised the ire of system administrators and people all over the country today, because they sent out a cease and desist order to AutoPatcher. Now, AutoPatcher, this is a great service. They were able to package up all the updates, and they made it real easy for people to update a number of machines. And essentially, Microsoft came out and said, no, you cannot do this no more. You're not an official distribution point. You have to shut down. We don't want you distributing our content anymore. You know, there are patches. So these guys are had to pull the plug on it. Now, there's some hope out there that there's a way that they can figure to work around the limitations that Microsoft has set upon them. But what's interesting here is all of the media that they were pulling came straight from Microsoft. There was nothing, you know, being stored locally. They were just kind of the conduit application to get, updates into Windows machines. And people are really not pleased by this turn of events. They've been running online for about 4 years. I think one of you sent me a link to this site a while back. We've talked about this in the show before. But the takedown notice has been issued, and they pulled the plug, at least on auto-patching Windows XP, Vista, and so forth. They may have other updates for other applications, but for now, Windows is the window updates are shut down. And they just, you know, they're smart. They can't, when somebody like Microsoft comes knocking, you have to be very, very careful, because they definitely have lawyers that have much deeper pockets and access to funds than any of us do, that's for sure. All right, Philips' new Power to Charge and Power to Go line touts Power for Life. This is another device that's being used to charge different devices when you are on the road or something, you forgot a charger. You just carry this little device with you, and it comes with the 6 different connector tips, and it allows you to get up to 15 hours of extra battery life on different devices. So very, very cool. I've had good luck with those types of devices. I've had a couple of here that I've reviewed, and this looks pretty slick. It's designed well, and the key thing here is it looks pretty, and it's made by Philips. So if you're looking for one of these external power supplies or power chargers, definitely check out the link in the show notes over at geeknewscentral.com. Now, being a total geek nerd, I'm always kind of watching for stuff. And I'll share a story with you here. A number of years ago, there was went to an online auction where there was a liquidation? Well, after the bubble burst in Silicon Valley, there was these sales that were simply amazing. They would have an online auction where a company would come in and they would auction everything. Tables, chairs, computers, monitors, you name it, servers, everything that was in a dot-com business, they would be selling on an online auction. And for a while, I dabbled in this because they had third-party shippers, which all I really had to do was, being here in Hawaii, I would go online, I would put 2 or 3 credit cards into their system, And when the auction, I would go through and pick out the stuff I wanted to bid on. And when the auction got going, I would just bid online. Sometimes I'd have to call in. And I would pick up pallets of monitors, pallets of computers. And then what I would do is I would immediately flip this stuff and I would put it all on eBay. I would put all the monitors on eBay. I would put all of the CPUs, anything that there was that I got, I would put on eBay. And because I was buying lot sizes, you know, I may have to, I would maybe spend $5,000 on a lot of computers, but then I would get maybe $6,000 or $7,000 back on eBay. So it was a couple of grand profit. It was a great gig because I never had to touch the product. The reshipper, I think, charged me, I don't know, it was really low, but generally they would have packaged everything up and sent it directly to me, but I kind of made a deal with them and paid a little extra percentage, and they would drop ship stuff to the people that won stuff on eBay. Now, I never, you know, I always had, you know, made sure that the people knew that the product hadn't been seen by me and that if it didn't work, they'd get their money back. And I think of all the times I did this, I only really kind of got hammered a couple of times on some stuff that turned up bad, but overall it was a great deal. So today, you know, after the dot-coms were all sold, these kind of auctions kind of dried up. Well, I saw a notice today, and here's what the PR Web press release says. Excuse me. What happens to $15 million worth of data center gear when the government changes its mind? A decision by the Department of Interior not to renew a 2005 IT lease with a minority contractor resulted in a warehouse full of new servers and data storage assets going to the auction block. So, of course, I'm like, time to rock and roll. Well, before, when they had these auctions, you could buy onesies, you could buy a lot. It was all dependent on how the auction was set up. Well, this one, whew, you're going to need some deep pockets, my friends, because they're going to auction lots of stuff. I mean, lots meaning like 20 blade servers, you know, whatever it may be that they're auctioning, you're going to have to buy 20 of them. And right now, I'm in the market for some data products. I'm looking for some data storage products and some of the exact stuff they're selling here. So I was like, oh man, I'm going to be able to get in. I'm going to be able to buy two or three storage devices, I'm going to be able to buy a couple of servers, I'm going to buy all the switches, and I'm going to get it at 20 cents on the dollar. And, you know, I was pumped up and went over to the website, and no, it's big lots of stuff that I wouldn't be able to afford to buy. So I'm hoping here that somebody is looking for a bargain and then will buy this stuff in bulk that has a lot bigger bank account than I have, and then you know, put this stuff up for sale as individuals and make a little money on it, but at the same time, you know, have this stuff available. This is high-end, whew, I mean, high-end cool stuff. And this auction is going to be going down in Virginia. And, boy, I tell you, it's on September 12th. I'm half tempted. I mean, I'm quite honest with you here. I'm half tempted to go out and preview this stuff and take a look, because there could be some significant, if I could afford to buy one of the lots and then take a couple of things out that I need and sell the rest. So I guess the question I'm going to ask here is any of you in want some data center gear? Are you looking for one-use servers? Are you looking for data switches? If anybody is, maybe we can pool our resources. Now, there's enough people listening to this show that we might be able to get enough of us together to buy a lot of this stuff and then really score big. But it's going to take some coordination. If you're interested, definitely email me, okay? geeknews@gmail.com. But this is the first auction like I've seen like this in a long, long time. And this is all brand new gear. You know it's going to work. That's the beauty of it. It's brand new storage arrays. It's just, you know, goes on. It's got high-end blade servers. It's just, whew. I'd love to get my hands on a few of these and not have to pay full retail. So maybe you do too. Send me an email, geeknews@gmail.com. Let's make a deal. So now that I've shared that, let's go on to a little iPhone news. Apple and AT&T playing good cop, bad cop. Apple playing good cop. AT&T playing bad cop. The unlocking software is not available yet. I've been sitting in anticipation of it being released. Some of you replied via voicemail, email, and so forth saying, go for it. And we'll talk a little bit about that more later. But AT&T is obviously being very aggressive and sicking their lawyers on anybody that is even whispering that they have some sort of a unlock software hack or so forth. While at the same time, I think Apple is sitting back smugly smiling, and they may play the game a little bit here, but we'll see what happens with this. You know, it's not to Apple's advantage to lock out these unlockers. I guess that's the best way to say it. So we'll keep an eye on this. And what do you think? Think it's worth the risk? You think it's worth the risk to, when those unlock codes come out, for me to go ahead and drop a T-Mobile SIM into an AT&T phone via the iPhone, that is? I think the risk might be worth it. We'll see. I'm just very, very disappointed. I found an article today by PC World, and the title of the article explains it all. Hewlett-Packard delays media smart home server to wait for operating system tweaks. I could have screamed. I really, really could. I think the software is still coming out, but the HP Media Smart Home Server could be delayed as long as Christmas here. They could delay the product 75 to 120 days. You know, I was in the beta of the home server, and I must admit, I was kind of surprised that they were done, considering some of the issues I continued to have when I was trying to load the second rev. So maybe here the vendors have went back to Microsoft and said, hey, this thing is not clean enough yet. It needs some more work, but this is bad news. Now, I don't know if any of the other vendors are going to wait. Maybe some of the other vendors are going to come out with a product. I am definitely going to be buying the product, that's for sure, whether it be the actual software or just buying an entire unit like this HP Media Smart Home Server. That's what I wanted. I was hoping to get my hands on that here in September when it comes out, but I think I'm just going to have to be a little bit more patient and wait. Now that Gateway is no longer owned by Gateway, we'll see if those brands that are due to come out do in the near future and maybe get a head start on HP. But the HP unit, I think, is going to be one of the slicker ones. All right, moving on here. Cell carriers are fined over missing E91 deadlines. Federal regulators have stepped on Sprint, Nextel, and with a total of $2.83 million in fines for not meeting a long past deadline for equipping subscribers with enhanced 911 services. And so it looks like Sprint, Nextel, I got whacked pretty good here. And I'm looking down through this list and seeing if anyone else got popped. But I think there's some other firms that are. It says right now the carrier has reached 94.7%. compliance, and I guess they're the only ones that really got in trouble here, but it's a pretty big slap on the wrist for not being E911 compliant as required by federal regulations. So we'll see what they do, and hopefully they'll get their act together. If not, I'm sure more fines will be coming. You know, if you think about where we've come in technology, if you think it back, I'll just think back, I'm going to go back maybe 15 years and think about some of the computing technology I was using 15 years ago and the size of it, the size of hard drives. You go back 20 years and you're looking at drum units. You go back even further and it's, you know, you got computer arrays that are size of a house. Well, IBM has made a couple of discoveries here that could cause another paradigm shift. You know, today when we have an iPod or any type of a media player, generally, what do we've got? Max right now is about 80 gigs on an iPod. And how many videos can you store on that with 80 gigs? You might be able to put, I don't know, how many songs can you put on an 80 gig iPod? Maybe 8,000-9,000 songs and, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 podcasts. You can get a lot of audio on there. But IBM's been doing some research, and they think they've been able to come up with a way now that where they're going to be able to, in the future, cram as many as 30,000 full-length movies into a gadget the size of an iPod. Now, if you think about that for a second, they're saying 30,000 full-length movies into the gadget, into a gadget the size of an iPod. And how are they going to do that? Well, IBM has said that they've come much closer to being able to do this by learning how to steer. Now, this is really gets wild. Learning how to steer a single atom in a way that could create building blocks for ultra-tiny storage devices. And this is nanotechnology here, folks. And not only did they do that with an atom, it goes on further here that they had another research firm, some folks in Zurich, Switzerland, have stumbled upon a way to manipulate molecules. Now, think about that for a second. They've figured out a way to manipulate a molecule to switch on and off a basic function needed in computer logic. And what they've discovered is they've been evaluating the vibration of a molecule when they noticed it had a distinct switching capability. And they're able to make it switch without changing the, the molecular structure of the molecule. So this is like, whoo, this is deep. Storage using manipulating molecules and atoms. Just think about that for a few minutes. What's next? Where are we headed? You know, there's some smart people out there. There really, really are. And I'm glad we have a lot of smart people because, wow, where are we going to be in 10 years, 20 years? We should make some predictions. We really should. Where do you think we're going to be in 20 years, folks? Where do you think? This would make for a great voicemail comment. Really put your thinking caps on. Think about where we've come in the last 20 and where we're going to go in the next 20. Where do you think we're going to be, you know, in 2027? 619-342-7365. Get your predictions in and be immortalized on the show. Well, think about it for a second and give a holler. I'd love to hear where you think we're going here and how far down the road we're going to be with all this. All right, next up, Google and Microsoft helping to defend fair use. And I said, oh, this is interesting. It appears that Google, Oracle, Microsoft, Yahoo, Sun, and Red Hat have launched a website called Defend Fair Use. And what may have prompted this was that the Computer and Communication Industry Association filed a complaint earlier this month with the FTC alleging that professional sports leagues, Hollywood studios, and book publishers were all using copyright notices that misrepresented the law. And that was that they were aggressively pursuing a right that they were not entitled to. A good example of that would be like Major League Football or baseball. You know, they come out, there is, they have that little notice. This broadcast cannot be reproduced without the explicit written permission of the National Football League, blah, 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 blah. You see it all the time. You hear it on the TV. And they're very aggressive about not letting people take footage from those games and repurposing it for fair use. And what this association is basically saying is yes, people do have some fair use rights to media. And at the same time, it looks like they're supporting the complaint filed by the Computer and Communication Industry Association. So it looks like some big dogs are actually going to stand up and fight for us for fair use. You know, so many people in this country have just ignored it and don't realize that fair use rights have been slowly stripped away. You know, by being a listener of this show, you're well informed. But it's nice to see that Oracle, Microsoft, Google, Yahoo, Sun, and Red Hat have, put their money where their mouths are and are supporting fair use rights. So we're going to find out more information on this. We'll have some link up in the show notes about it at geeknewscentral.com. As the internet has evolved, you know, I think before, most of us probably just surfed the internet, right? Well, now what we're starting to see is the utilization of the internet for many, many varied purposes, and that's the same within enterprise. And I found a very interesting breakdown of where enterprise level bandwidth is going. And I bet you if you did a study of just regular home usage, it probably would break down very, very similar. So let me read this off to you here. The enterprise system saying that 29% of the traffic goes to normal internet web surfing, 3% goes to instant messaging, 21% goes to email, 12% goes to voice IP, 20% goes towards video, which I was very surprised, and then an additional 8% to web conferencing, and then they had another category of 7%. So it goes to show that the diversity of applications and usage of the internet has continued to expand. But now, you know, you look here and you've got 29% of the traffic being based upon just surfing the net as compared to 21%. Now, I wonder how much of that 21% is made up of spam, but I was pretty surprised. I think the thing I was most surprised about was seeing that video makes up 20% of the enterprise bandwidth usage. I don't know about you, but I'm not allowed to really watch video at work. If I, you know, it's not condoned, and you get scolded. You really, really do if you're watching video during working hours. Is that saying, you know, are you guys restricted from watching videos via your network connections at your place of business? But I was surprised, really was, that 20% was stuck out there for video. Every once in a while, I have a gadget that I see reviewed on the net that I have my doubts about. And one that I'm going to kind of call to your attention today is it's called Sleek Audio SA6 Earphones. It's an earphone that lets you change the EQ of the earphone with interchangeable parts. And I'm just looking at this thing, and how many of you have a hard enough time finding headsets sometimes? But can you imagine having a headset where the earbud is in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different pieces? That to me looks like a nightmare. I don't know if anybody's really going to use this product or not, but I know I would shy away from it because my kids would get a hold of this thing and it would be tore apart and there would be there would just be the wire left. That's all that would be left. Everything else would be spread throughout the house someplace. And I have to be down on my hands and knees and looking underneath tables and desks. But I think maybe you'll agree with me, maybe you won't. But for those of you that are earphone freaks and you want to get something that you can change the EQ right on the earphone, this might be the product for you. Lots of discussion going on about the Microsoft Windows activation failure, the WGA activation failure over the last weekend. I'm not going to go too deep into this article, but this is a great write-up on, you know, basically weighing the cost of, you know, trying to prevent piracy at the same time trying not to prevent people from legitimately using the product. So I have this link up. This was at eWeek on Microsoft Watch. Found a great article on a website that I've never visited before. It's over at instabloke.com. And I don't know why the website's instabloke.com and the actual website name is blogbloke, but anyway, this is what it is. But this gentleman has listed Mythbusters, Shattering 7 Myths of Blogging. And this is a great read. So if you're a blogger and you're struggling a little bit, I think he has 7 very, very good recommendations. I'm just going to read a couple of them, then I'll let you guys come through and read the rest. Myth number 1, you should be posting every day. And basically he says no, you don't have to post every day, but you should, when you do post, make them quality, which ties right into myth number 2, quality versus quantity. So it's more kind of a basic common sense type of stuff. But it's a good review, and it made me go, I have to look at how I'm blogging as well to make sure that I'm kind of following some of these tenets. Those of you that are Facebook users, I think I found a very, very cool tool to play with, and you may want to just load it and unload it. But it's called the Friend Wheel. It's a widget that you can load in, and you can see how your Facebook friends are interconnected. You know, a lot of times I'm subscribed to, And I think I've got, I don't know, 200 or 300 Facebook friends. Mostly it's those of you that listen to the show. It's people that are in the podcasting space. You know, it's a pretty tight little crowd. But this Facebook friend wheel allows you to see how you are interconnected with other people that are within my friend circle. So definitely check this Facebook widget out. Very, very cool, kind of fun to play with. If nothing else, just it gives you some insight into how we really are very, very interconnected. Jason Calacanis has a good article out about how John Battelle has done the right thing with demo at Web 2.0. They're going to make it free. One of the big challenges of demo was that companies had to come up with almost like $20,000 to pay to be at demo. Then they would have to, they got 6 minutes on the stage, and it ended up being costing these companies like $3,000 a minute just to present their companies. And while the TechCrunch 40 conference in 2007 is free, it looks like the demoing at Web 2.0 is now going to be free, which is good. Great news for startups. It really, really is. All right, on the RIAA front, the very interesting development here, and it talks about copyright misuse in the basis of a new argument being out there where it's UMG versus Lindor, and this is a lawsuit that's moving forward, is that they're being accused of collusion and acting as an illegal cartel in that the RIAA does not explicitly own the copyright to the material. The companies that they represent do. So what the actual argument is that, hey, you shouldn't be able to have this like joint entity representing all these different firms. But anyway, it's a good write-up on this, and I don't know where it's going to go, but it's a new tack that they're using to go after the RIAA, and this is the first time the RIAA has asked for specific language to be struck out of the lawsuit, and they're saying it's frivolous. But when you read through this the whole way, and which I recommend that you do, you're going to find that their strategy, I think, is very, very well placed, and it may work. It really, really might. But we'll see what the judge has to say. You know, so far we haven't won very many. It'd be nice to win one here. Got a couple other quick articles that I'll have linked up. Actually, a couple of articles I've linked up in the show notes that we're not going to talk about. But one final article I do want to talk about today, and maybe many of you. I'm sure many of you don't even know this exists, but, and I haven't used it for years, but I remember as a kid being able to dial the local exchange number plus 1212, and that would get me time. You say time, it would be like tick tock, tick tock. At the tone, the time will be 10 o'clock. Or the temperature is minus 32 degrees Fahrenheit, or whatever the centigrade, you know. It was a service that the phone companies offered for people to be able to call in and get the time. Now, before computers and before we all had mobile phones that were synced up to a time clock with our mobile providers, you know, in order to get the most accurate time, you had to call, you know, get a source. Now, I had a HF. Ham radio, which I could get time. As a matter of fact, that is still on the air today. It goes tick, 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 tick. I have to get a recording of that. And it actually is broadcast on multiple frequencies on the HF band. And it's a time hack for hackers and for people that are not in areas that don't have good synchronization of time. So anyway, AT&T and LA is shutting down their service. They're one of the last couple of sites or a couple of locations that have it. I think Vegas is one that still has time, and they're up in Northern California, there's one. But all the other time numbers are down. A little bit of nostalgia for you, and I thought I would share. Okay, well, let's get right into audio comments here. As always, send your comments to geeknews@gmail.com or call the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. Again, 619-342-7365. Here's the first audio comment.
Hey, Todd. This is John in Atlanta.
Hey, John.
I was responding to your T-Mobile iPhone question. I used to be with T-Mobile, and I started with them way back when they used to be PowerTel here in Atlanta. And the reason I did was because at the time, they were the only cell phone company that offered coverage in just about every part of the world. And I travel internationally quite a bit. And it's just as important for my phone to work in China as it is for it to work in Atlanta. And I stayed with them when they became T-Mobile, and I used to have one of the HTC Windows devices. But I left T-Mobile primarily because they just weren't keeping up with the technology. That HTC device that I had back then running Windows Mobile, you had to reboot it every single day in order to make sure you got your calls. And everybody else was coming out with cool new devices like BlackBerries and Trios and things like that, and they just weren't keeping up. And I'm in the market for a new phone right now. I've got a Trio 650 with the Death Star, AT&T, and it's been dropped one too many times, and so I'm looking around. And I went back to T-Mobile, and the only device I would consider getting from them is their Wing device, but it just doesn't stack up against the AT&T offering of the HTC 8535. The Wing's only got a 200 megahertz processor, and it works on Edge. And the AT&T device is G3, and it's 400 megahertz. And so I'm afraid, as much as I don't like it, I'm going to be staying with AT&T. But if T-Mobile would ever get their technology act together and kind of get up with everybody else and get on the bleeding or leading edge, I'd go back in a heartbeat. Love the show. Talk to you later. Bye.
Hey, thanks for calling in. And to be honest with you, I can understand – let me shut this. I can understand your reasoning there, but – as much as a geek as I am, I have just a regular phone. I have one of the skinny Motorola Razors. It's tiny, but I use it as a regular phone, and I do a little text messaging on it. But that's all I use it for. And I understand if you need a BlackBerry or whatever it may be, you would need a more robust service, and I agree. But for phone service, everywhere I go, they haven't been beat yet, price-wise, and I'm sure if I'm getting some off-beaten place, then I probably won't have service, but so far, so good, and it's just for a regular telephone service, it's been terrific, so we'll have to see how it goes here, and I'll keep you advised, but I think I've got three phones on the plan, 2,000-minute plan, I'm paying... My cell bill is under $100 a month, and I use almost all the minutes every month. So, okay, moving on to the next voicemail call.
Hey, Todd, this is Dave here, just giving you a call.
Hey, Dave.
You mentioned in your last podcast you got the edition of Office 2007. That's pretty sweet. I actually just got Office 2007 this week also. I've been delaying the upgrade. I last had 2000. So this is a big change for me. But, it takes a while to get used to. But for some reason, I got a deal on it, too. I work for a company, and I guess they came with a deal with Microsoft where they have a business... Well, it's the full... I don't think it's a premium edition, but it's like everything but one thing. I don't know what that is. But that edition... you can use it on your home computer for non-work-related stuff. So, like, not a work computer. But I got it for $29.
Whoa.
My company sent me an email about that, and I almost started laughing. I actually did start laughing because I couldn't believe it. But, yeah, if you're working for a company, you might want to check and see if they have that special deal because I just couldn't believe it.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
That,
talk to you later. Great show. Bye.
Are you sure that was a legal copy? Are you kidding me? $29.95? I know that there's some Microsoft employees that listen to this show, and I would love to hear how in the world did he get that for $29.95? What kind of a deal is that? Holy, that's an amazing price. Give me five. Oh my goodness! Well, I'm glad you got it. Mine was more than $29.95. It was under $100, but it wasn't. I paid $79.99 is what I paid for mine. But mine only had the basic stuff. It had Word, Outlook, Excel, and PowerPoint. So I had the four. It was a basic edition. So, $29.95. What a deal. What a deal. All right, on to our next voicemail call.
Hello, Todd. This is Hamid Campos again. I just listened to your newest show, and some of that stuff was pretty cool, man. And actually, my nephew found the thing about that gap thing that you're talking about that NASA or somebody found in the space gap? Some university found that.
Yeah.
They were talking about some gap in the universe or whatever. Yeah, he found a little clip that that woman was talking about it, too, on Yahoo News. Anyway, do you have an idea about the Mike Port Pro you mentioned in the last show? Like, excuse me, is that going to be something you can buy at a regular, like, Staples, or is that something you're going to buy at something like American Musical Supply or Sweetwater Sound? Oh, and, I don't know if you checked the specs on them, but do you happen to know if that will support stereo? Because they are phantom-powered mics that are stereo. For instance, the AT825 is stereo. And, I'm not sure if you mentioned, but... No, you didn't. But do you happen to know that thing only has XLR, or does it also have the mini jack plugs? Because, you know, if it has mini jack plugs, that would be nice, too, so I can use an AT822 and stuff. But, as far as the XLR thing, I think I can use an AT825. But yeah, I heard you say it was $145, but I just wanted to know what you know so far about carriers. Oh, and speaking of mics, because I'm a very curious kind of guy, what kind of mic do you use? Because it sounds pretty good. And actually, come to think about it, because you said to talk about them, if you're recording, if it had bass, yeah, it had a little bit more bass than the one before that. Just a hair more bass. Alrighty then, Todd, that'll be it for now. And talk to you next time. Bye bye.
Hey, thanks for your call. The mic I use here is a Rode NTK. I have a Rode NTK. It's a condenser mic. And I've been using it now for over a year. I'm really, really happy with it, and that's the mic I use. So far as that other device, you should be able to get that, I would imagine, soon through Sweetwater. The link is up in the show notes from the last show at Geek News Central, so you'll be able to click through and actually look at it, look at the specs. But it definitely is only XLR connections, and I don't know if it's stereo. I would imagine it is. Most of those devices are. But, give it a check out. You can go back to show number 297 show notes. There'll be a link to it there, and you'll be able to actually get the full specs and probably find out where it's being sold at as well. All right, let me go ahead and jump into the email comments. And I don't know if I read this letter from Wendy on the last show or not, but she I had asked about what type of speed she was getting with Hughes.net. And she says she has the lowest home plan, and I think I read this already, but she says she's getting a slightly older modem, and she says the newer modems go faster, but she's getting 875K down and 55K up. All right, moving on here to Darren. He says, hey, another great show. With respect to the guy who's blocking Firefox because of ad blocker, he better start blocking IE7 as well. I installed an add-in for IE7 called IE7 Pro. It adds some functionality to IE7, including ad blocking. It also supports user scripts as Grease Monkey is to Firefox. So thanks, Darren, for that comment. Got an email from Ken. He said, hey, Todd, you're definitely not breaking the DMCA by taking the iPhone and using it on another carrier, just as it is not illegal for you to unlock the phone, but selling the software to do is... You are not breaking the DMCA by taking said unlocked iPhone and using it with another carrier. The law covers both situations. Well, I think, I don't know, Ken. We'll have to see what happens here with this. And I think it'll take some time to wash out. Got a pretty long email here from Christopher. He says, Ironically, I wrote a school paper a few months ago about broadcasting original content on the internet, and one subject I touched on was advertising revenue and how broadcasters and content producers could earn enough revenue online to make this venture worthwhile. I think one of the ideas one of the best ideas is in video ads. They're all over the place. I think TNT is one of the biggest users of this. If it's used correctly, I not only have no issue with it, I'm a huge fan of it. Not to be fair, it can be misused. For instance, as a big NBA fan, I watch a lot of the NBA playoffs on TNT, and they will often go to commercial, and as soon as they come back, show an in-video ad for additional 30 seconds. I just don't see that being the correct way to go about it. It says, I also witnessed an indie type race on ESPN, and instead of switching to full screen commercial, they had up a dual screen, one with the race without volume and one with the commercial with volume. This lasted for the approximate time of a regular commercial break. I was floored at the possibilities. If you have original content that you're getting for free and all the content providers is asking for in return is a bit of screen time, how can we argue with that? I think if this model was embraced not only by the content providers but by consumers as well, we could see even bigger boom in original internet content broadcasting than we have already. This is a topic that excites me that I could go on about forever, but to make a long story short, he says too late, I'll close by saying I would love to see this model embraced by national broadcasting companies as well as internet content producers. Instead of a 40-minute show with 20 minutes of commercials, wouldn't we be better off with some combination of 55-minute shows, 5 minutes of commercial, and some in-video advertising? I certainly think so. Here's to hoping I'm not in the minority, at least not for long. Would love to hear your take on this. I think it's a great idea. I don't think consumers are going to be, well, I don't think the content creators on the national broadcasting site are going to be able to deal with it because it's a lot more expensive to do 55 minutes worth of content than it is to do 40 minutes worth of content. So the price increase may require, you know, in production may require a longer sets of ads. So it may offset, but I think it's a good model to go to. We'll see over time, long as it doesn't get too invasive. Got an email from Dorothy, longtime listener of the show, and she provided me some gallery pictures. She said, I attended the Nisei Week Ando Parade and festivities this past Sunday. Haven't been to the Ando since high school. Took footage pics, used my iMovie Sony HDV camera. iMovie has its pros and cons. Big con is inability to work in application while a project is being rendered and uploaded. YouTube renderings weren't good. We'll do some experimenting in Compressor and Visual Hub for YouTube uploads. But anyway, she basically sent me the link. She said, go ahead and enjoy, and I'll have the link up for those of you that are not familiar with a typical Nisei Week Ando Parade. It might be something for you want to check out. Got an email from Jerry. He says, first of all, thank you for the great informative inventing podcast. Look forward to each new show. I discovered your show while searching for a video during CES and have been listening ever since. As one of the pioneers in this new and exciting field, could you explain, either in a reply or comments on future podcasts, what criteria is used to identify a podcast with a clean tag? Is there a standard published somewhere, or is this strictly voluntary with each podcaster using their own judgment? Well, as you have found out, he says here, the reason I ask is I am surprised by some of the crude language I hear on certain podcasters carrying a clean tag. Although I'm quite liberal personally in my work getting young people involved with this exciting new technology, I have to be careful. Yes, it's up to the podcaster to put that flag in there. There's no set standard. It's supposed to be clean if it's good for all ages, and it's supposed to be flagged as mature, or you know, however they've got it set up, if it's not, and very few people follow it. It's sad that they don't, and I would complain back to this particular podcast. I would send them an email, say, hey, you know, I thought your podcast was clean, and it's not. Set the flag in your system so that from now on I know what's going on. All right, folks, I had a bunch more emails, but really out of time. I want to thank John, Matthew, Scott, Wellmod, Bob, another email from John, Jerry, for all sending in emails. Apologize we couldn't get through them all tonight. I'll have the links that you provided up in the show notes, of course, and keep your commentary coming. Thank you for your support. And for all of you, hey, thanks for being part of the family here, being part of the Ohana, and we look forward to putting together a fun show 300, which is coming next week. And, of course, it'll be $2.99 coming on Tuesday. And as always, of course, stay subscribed. Tell people about the show. And thanks for all your great comments and support. And as always, again, geeknews@gmail.com or call the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. Until next week, take care. Have a very safe weekend out there, folks. Really, please. It's a weekend where you need to be aware of your driving and be safe. All right, take care and aloha.